This is Dare to Be Authentic Talk Radio Worldwide with relationship coach, life coach, and author Mari Mitchell, broadcasting live from Southern California.
Hi, and welcome to Dare to Be Authentic Radio. I'm your host, Mari Mitchell, with special guest Brad Watts. We're going to be talking about the importance of addressing the damage done by sibling sexual abuse. Brad is a licensed professional counselor and certified sex offender treatment provider. He specializes in working with individuals and families where sibling sexual abuse has occurred and has helped hundreds of people on their journey to healing. He's also the author of Sibling Sexual Abuse. Welcome to the show, Brad. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great, Mari. How are you doing?
Doing great as well. Good to hear. So tell us a little bit about the story of how you came to what you're doing today.
Yeah, well, it starts, you know, 9 or 10 years ago. I was in graduate school in Tennessee, and my professor at the time, you know, I took several classes from her, and she had a great influence on me, talked about her work in a residential treatment center, you know, prior to her going back to getting her PhD in treating adolescent sexual offenders. And I remember at the time thinking, you know, there's no way I could ever do anything like that. And
right.
I'm thinking, you know, holy cow, you know, how did she do that? You know, thinking, wondering about her safety, you know, all these different conceptions that I had at the time. And so, anyway, I talked to her quite a bit about it, you know, it's over the couple of years I was there. And she talked about how much she enjoyed it and different aspects of it and how fascinating it was and how she really enjoyed, you know, working with these adolescents and helping them to rehabilitate. And so, fast forward, me and my wife, you know, move up to Virginia, and, you know, I'm interviewing jobs and come across a place, and they're like, yeah, we'd like to hire you, but how do you feel about working with our, we call it TSA program, just treatment for sexually acting out youth, you know, that have sexually offended. And I remember thinking, well, you know, I'm willing to give it a shot because of my professor's experience with it. So I was like, hey, I'll jump in, you know, both feet and go at it and do the best I can with it. And so that's where it started. And so I've worked exclusively, you know, over nearly the last 5 years with our sexual offending population, and have enjoyed the work quite a bit.
Wow. So what has been the most rewarding thing that you've had from working in this particular area?
Yeah, that's a great question. Seeing families that feel like they can never be put back together, be able to come together at the start of treatment, you know, where parents are just, you know, their head spinning with everything, and to see the progress that can go on within a family and then be able to successfully return back to the community and just these wounds that they didn't feel like they could ever move past, you know, being able to see that progress and improvement. So just that level of hope that they can return within a family.
That's wonderful. What's been the most challenging for you?
Challenging, you know, particularly kind of early on and still just some of the accounts, some of the stories, you know, like for anybody, you know, it can really be challenging, you know, with the level of sexual abuse that goes on and that's encountered. So yeah, that can certainly be challenging for me and really anyone else, you know, working in the field.
Right. A family that's going through sibling abuse through this type of devastating circumstance, what do you think they need the most?
I think they need to know that there is a path forward, that there, you know, that's the whole purpose of the book, you know, to show a path forward, to know that there is hope and that they're not alone. You know, just to know that they can move forward, families can and do heal from this, and it's much, much more prevalent than what families realize. We just don't talk about it.
Right, exactly. And what helps them, what's the best thing for them to begin to move forward? What helps them most?
You know, just I think seeing, one, that they're not alone. I think, two, you know, just kind of knowing that, you know, the prognosis can be really high. you know, when you look at statistics and research about adolescents that get in to a specialized sex offender treatment program, you know, unlike adults, they have a very high prognosis to never fall back into legal trouble by reoffending again. And then just really seeing the progress that their child is making as they see the changes, as they see, you know, the effort that they're making, you know, that can go a long way, you know, for families.
That's great. And how long does this kind of treatment take, or is it all over the place at all different times with different people, depending on, you know, depending on the child?
Yeah, so the average would be, you know, within North America and in these, you know, specialized programs, you're looking at about 14 months. Certainly it can be less than that, you know, depending on where somebody's at and their engagement in treatment and just kind of where the family is at, because everybody's kind of at different places, you know, when they start. But you're looking at an average of about 14 months.
Okay, so you treat the entire family, though.
Yeah, specifically what we're treating, you know, the offender here, and then we're bringing in, you know, the family to help with them. But, you know, specifically, like in my work, you know, I'm working with the offender, and then we also work with the family as well.
So I remember you said that when you first started, you never thought that you could do this kind of work. I mean, this has to be hard on anybody, the stories, everything. How does it feel now that you know that you can do this kind of work and that you're making a difference in the life of the offenders and of their families?
Yeah, you know, it means a lot. I have a lot of gratification, you know, in the work, you know, that we do, and others, you know, in this field as well, and seeing the change that can take place, because, you know, there's such a feeling of hopelessness, you know, when disclosures are made, and then just to see, you know, what can go on, and then, you know, what you're looking at long term, as opposed to, you know, kids being able to turn their lives around, you know, and be able to have a future, as opposed to going on to be an adult offender or reaching, you know, levels that we see with pedophiles and others, and the good that can mean for society. But these kids, it's a lot different than what we're talking about with adults. And, you know, there's a high prognosis of them turning things around. And we see kids, you know, I know in my work, high levels of success and being able to rehabilitate and to change.
That's wonderful. That's really, really good news. I had no idea. But I guess it's because they're so young and it's caught early. Why is that, that it's so much easier to rehabilitate them?
Yeah, that's a big part of it. The other aspect is just brain development. You know, with adolescents, they don't have the set patterns that adults have in offending. So, for example, you look at, we'll take Jerry Sandusky, the old Penn State coach, as an example. You know, when that all came out, you know, he'd been sexually abusing and molesting kids for some 30 years and had a set pattern where he was using, you know, his football camps, was targeting you know, people from broken homes and different things like that. And it's just set, you know, the adolescent brain, you know, as they really come to realize the impact of what they've done, as we give them more, you know, education, they're able to see that and they're much, much more willing to change as opposed to adults.
Right. Okay. That makes sense. I didn't realize about the brain part. It's right. It's not fully developed. Very interesting. So what role does authenticity play in all of this?
Well, for me, it's just really, you know, like what I'm doing with the book, is just talking about the importance of talking about it. Like I call it, you know, America's silent epidemic. We don't talk about it. And just really just trying to spread a message of hope as far as families and individuals and survivors and everybody, that they're not alone. That we need to have an honest public discourse with this and not shy away from it. But the more we talk about it, the more families will be able to seek out resources, as opposed to try and hide it, not know what to do, you know, or just those feelings of hopelessness that can set in. But no, this is something that is fairly common out there. And, you know, it doesn't mean, you know, your family can't be put back together. You know, just because it happened. You know, it's a long, hard road, but the whole purpose of the book is to show a path forward.
And there has to be a level of shame that the family members, all of them, experience. How do you deal with that?
Yeah, there certainly is shame on all aspects, and certainly, you know, when we're talking about the offender, you know, the level of guilt, you know, is good, you know, because, you know, if they don't feel guilty about what they've done, you know, that's a more serious problem. And
right.
then just going, and it takes time, you know, but working to earn trust back, you know, through changing, through showing what they've learned, and being able to move forward in that.
Okay, so the ones that don't feel the guilt, is there hope for them as well? Do they need more treatment? How does that work?
Yeah. And so, you know, what happens is it really, I mean, as long as adolescents get in and complete these kinds of programs, the success rates are very, very high. And so typically, you know, even if they're not filling that level, you know, you mm-hmm. do a lot of different kinds of work with them in addressing that and tailoring it to those kinds of needs. But it's, like I said, a lot of psychoeducation, you know, where we're teaching them skills, helping them understand, you know, what these survivors, you know, go through,
mm-hmm.
the effects of that. And we see, and another part is treatment. It is a long time, you know, when you look at other areas, and typically kids do buy around and come in and you know, do a good job with it.
Awesome. Very good. Wow. So what do you think is the main message you want to bring to the public, Brad?
Yeah, that we need to start talking about this epidemic. And as we talk about it, as we share information, and particularly as clinicians can lead out in these discussions, that, you know, we can make successful inroads towards fighting back the epidemic of sibling sexual abuse, and that there is hope, and that people don't need to despair, as difficult as it is. And you go through different aspects of obviously the difficulty that can come with that, but that there is a great deal of hope, and that it takes all of us, you know, talking about it, helping
mm-hmm.
others, offering support, allowing survivors to have platforms to share their experience, because they're the real experts in this, and what we can do to help bring families back together and facilitate healing.
Right. There's something wonderful about knowing that someone else has gone through what you've gone through, no matter what it is that you're suffering from, right? You can feel so isolated, believing that you're the only one who's experienced this, right? Or your family is the only one devastated by this. But there's such a comfort to know that other people went through it through too. And mm-hmm. you can also see the success. Like you said, you have a huge success rate. So that has to be very encouraging for the families.
Oh, definitely. Definitely.
Okay, good. Well, we're going to take a quick break to hear from our sponsors. And if you'd like to call in and ask Brad a question, the line is open at 929-477-3869. That's 929-477-3869. You can start calling now, and we'll be right back.
New York, 1971. After surviving an assassination attempt on my life, I created another alias, Bulletproof. The mafia lifestyle can get messy when you start an all-out war on the mob. You know that movie, The Godfather? Well, I'm living it. Let's just say robbing a mob's money drop sets the whole war in motion. This thrilling killer series, Killer with a Heart, Killer with Three Heads, and coming soon, Killer with Black Blood by J.L. Hill, keeps your blood pumping. Get these urban crime fictions from Amazon or RockHillPublishing.com.
What happens in your body begins with your energy. If you can't find relief from your pain, it may be time to look deeper. Mindy Stritch is a certified healing therapist that will help you discover the root cause of what hurts. To learn more, schedule a free consultation. Call 678-642-7771 or visit www.mindystritch.com. That's MindyStritch.com. Restoring your energy will renew your life.
So you want your business to reach its potential? Is your technology supporting your growth or holding you back?
Through business management coaching, real-time collaboration, and customized solutions, Mindcore can help leading companies take back control of their technology, streamline their business, and outperform their competition. Visit our website at mind-core.com to learn why 500-plus business leaders trust Mindcore for transforming their collaboration, cybersecurity, and cloud computing. That's mind-core.com.
We're back on Data to Be Authentic Radio. I'm your host, Mari Mitchell, with special guest Brad Watts, talking about the importance of addressing the damage done by sibling sexual abuse. So you mentioned briefly your book, Brad. Let's talk a little bit more in detail on that. What was your inspiration for writing the book, and what can the reader expect?
Yeah, just when I was, you know, with the work that I do and just thinking about families, you know, so what kind of access can they have to know what to do? Because, you know, you get the disclosure and, you know, families just, their heads are spinning. And so it was just kind of trying to write a path forward for them. So it's kind of a big picture look at all the different aspects that families would need to know. So there's aspects of, you know, what survivors go through, you know, going forward as far as with the offending sibling. And so, you know, my desire was, you know, I just didn't see anything like this out there, you know, and just really not seeing much at all about sibling sexual abuse being discussed. And as I just saw more and more, as I would do presentations and people would come up to me and you know, share their stories, that I just wanted to put something out there and that's hopeful, that can give people a resource to, hey, this is what I can do. Other people have this. You know, this happens in families, you know, across the board in all kinds of families, and to try and supply a roadmap, and you know, have some measure of hope for families that, you know, it is possible, you know, for their family to heal and to move forward.
That's great. So, do you think that the best thing that your book offers is the hope factor?
Yes, I do. I would definitely agree with that. You know, I think so. And, you know, and just, you know, that there's resources there, you know, I have in the book, you know, instructions on what they can do and really just trying to educate even people that aren't familiar with sibling sexual abuse on what survivors go through and just how common it is, how difficult it is, and the problems that are caused, you know, when we ignore it. And this is something that can go on through generations if it's not addressed.
Mm-hmm. What else do we need to know about this? You know, see, this whole thing about generations, I didn't know about that. So even though these are all new siblings, this can go generational?
Yes, it can carry on, and we see that. And particularly we see a lot of these problems going into adulthood, you know, because, you know, a majority of survivors won't ever disclose it because they don't, one, they're afraid about breaking up their family. You know, two, you know, there's just such a fear, you know, that they have from siblings through pressure, you know, and just from a variety of angles, you know, a lot of times feeling like they won't be believed. And so this can go on into adulthood, and so they can show up to therapy or, you know, other things with other kinds of problems that all stem from sibling sexual abuse.
Wow. That's pretty tough.
Yeah.
What else did you want to tell the listener about this subject?
Just to talk about it, to educate yourself about it, so that we can be good global citizens and supportive of survivors, of families, and just to try and normalize this. If I had a wish and a dream that you know, we could turn on the TV and we see award shows with a ribbon, a color dedicated for sibling sexual abuse. We would have fundraisers for sibling sexual abuse. We would talk about, you know, supporting others like we do in other forms of sexual abuse and other forms of abuse. And not to make this such a subject that people just shy away from, as difficult as it is. And I certainly realize, you know, how difficult it is to talk about it. But the more we can talk about it, the more we can normalize it, and the more we can help survivors, families, and offenders to rehabilitate, and it will be a better society because of it.
Right. And what's the best way for us to support the family? Mostly by talking about it or making sure there's a platform for talking about it, or is there other ways?
I think both of those ways. I think in other ways, too, the more we can talk about it, the more we can support others, the more we can give survivors a platform, because as they hear us talking more and more about it, they're going to feel safer to share their stories, and they're the ones that can really educate us the most on what we can do to fight this epidemic.
Right. Very interesting. Okay, so let's talk about how to get a hold of you and your book, Brad.
Yeah. My website is bradwattslpc.com. You can also find me on Twitter, on Facebook, and on Instagram.
Very good. And you can find Brad on my radio show website. You can just go to lifecoachmari.com and click on the radio show link, and he's there with his picture, a link to his interview, and a link to his website and his book. And make sure you spread this around. This is a live show, but we will have a replay of it available right after. So spread this, because Brad's mission is to get talking about this subject so that we can help those victims. We can help those survivors, I should say. Very good. So is there one last thing that you wanted to say to a listener?
Yeah, if this has happened to you, if you've experienced that, you know, just don't be afraid to get help, to reach out. And you know, all we can do as individuals to be supportive in that. But there are clinicians that specialize in this and that can guide you through that, whether it's a family, whether it's, you know, it's happened in your own life. But there is hope with this. There are successful, you know, specialist, you know, treatment options available. But like I said, the more we can talk about it and reach out, you know, the better as far as on our end to support those survivors and families where this has happened.
Very good. I have a question that I was thinking about. So is there any advice for parents? Are there signs? Can we as parents be able to recognize maybe some signs so that this doesn't go on, or that so we can find it and you know, and bring forth the healing?
Yeah, that's a great question, Mari. And again, changes in behavior. In the book, there's a lot of things I go through, but changes in behavior from the offender, the offending sibling, or you know the surviving sibling. You know, just seeing those changes in behavior, you know, cue into that, you know, and you know, don't be afraid to just ask some really hard questions sometimes, and just know whatever is said to believe that survivor and support them, and then you can move forward. But you can clue into certain kinds of things, and I've got a whole chapter in the book, you know, devoted to that. So signs you can look for.
Okay, good. You know, it's interesting because I always told my children, and I have two daughters and a son who are grown now, of course, but I always warn them about strangers, you know, or even family friends or whatever. But I never warned anybody about a sibling. It's like, you know what I'm saying? You don't expect, or you don't warn them about their father. That's a whole different case. But it's like, it's not part of the talk that we had back then. So I don't know. I guess there has to be a talk that nobody, you know, nobody, it doesn't matter who they are. Is they're your brother, if they're your sister, if they're whoever. Does there need to be a talk with children about this?
Yes, yes. And you know, and just not allowing anyone, you know, starting young to touch you in these areas, and that just, you know, monitor that. You know, the more parents are just really clued in and really involved in their kids' lives, you can pick up some of those changes in behavior and, you know, different things that are going on along those lines. But, yeah, the more involvement, the better. And hopefully some of those red flags can be manifested, and then parents can step in. You know, my advice I give is follow your gut. You know, if you feel like something's going on, something's just not quite right, usually that's the case, whether it's people in schools, whether it's just other concerned adults, teachers. You know, there's nothing wrong with just following that gut just to be safe.
Yeah, that's really good. I like that. And, you know, mothers especially, you can tell when something's off with the child, you know. And but sometimes they're reluctant to talk, so you tell them what's wrong. If something's wrong, no, everything's okay. What do you suggest in a case like that? So you know something's not right with the child. How do you get them to open up? I mean, this is serious.
Yeah. Yeah, well, you certainly can't force that, right?
Right.
And so it's just having that relationship where they know and they feel safe coming to you. Because a lot of times they're going to try and protect you as a mom or dad or grandma or granddad
right.
because, you know, they're afraid that the family will be broken up. Who knows what the offending sibling is telling them,
right.
you know, kind of threatening them or pressuring them. But just
mm-hmm.
being that safe space for them and knowing that you're going to believe them no matter what. So when they do come and muster up all the courage in the world, because that's what it takes to come to
yeah.
you, then you're going to support them and believe them.
Okay. Wow. It's just thinking of a little one mustering all that courage, that really breaks my heart. But, you know, it's the reality of it. And I'm glad that we're able to talk about it because, like you say, if we talk about it, the spotlight will be more on it. Why do you think there's so little spotlight on this versus other kinds of sexual abuse?
Well, a couple of reasons. One, it makes us uncomfortable. You know,
mm-hmm.
it's not something we want to talk about, and quite frankly, it's not something we want to even think about,
right.
you know, within our families. The other thing is, I mean, it's easy for us to spot, okay, Jerry Sandusky, you know, that kind of abuse is pretty easy to determine. When you talk about between siblings, you know, where's the line between normal exploration and, you know, what makes it sexual abuse? And so
right.
it's harder to identify as opposed to what we kind of think of, older man molesting young kids. I mean, that's pretty cut and dry. And that's what
mm-hmm.
we're used to. And
right.
so we don't talk about it because it makes us so uncomfortable.
Yeah. And you just mentioned something, normal experimenting. So that's something that exists. Nobody talks about that either. And,
that's right.
And how do you determine the difference?
Yeah, so there's a few things that go in with that. Age difference is one. You know,
mm-hmm.
when they're outside of usually a 2-year age gap, you know, the motivation of the kids and the exploration, you know, is it just curiosity or is it sexual gratification? Usually it's just going to happen, you know, one, maybe two times. Sexual
mm-hmm.
abuse, it's repeated times.
Okay.
What you're looking at is usually a much greater age difference. So average, depending on the research that you read, is usually around, you know, 14 to 15 as far as a sibling sexual offender, and usually
okay.
about 6,
Ooh.
You know, 6 years old on the survivor. So, you
okay.
know, that kind of age difference, well, yeah, we know, you know, exploration there, you know, that's not appropriate. That's not
right.
age differences. And then there's always, I won't say always, but there's a high level of coercion, manipulation, those kinds
mm-hmm.
of things involved in sexual
okay.
abuse where there isn't in you know, a couple of 5-year-olds comparing
right.
body parts.
Right, right. Very good. Well, Brad, thank you so much for being on the show. You've given us so much really good information. Make sure you check out his website, bradwattslpc.com, or find him on my website and spread this message. Thank you so much for listening in. One last thing you'd like to say, Brad, as we close?
No, I mean, just I really appreciate everybody taking the time to listen, and feel free to reach out to me, you know, via my website or social media, and, you know, I'd love to answer your questions.
Fantastic. Very good. Well, thanks so much. Thank you for listening in to Dare to Be Authentic Radio, and make sure you catch us next time for the next episode. Bye for now.
This is Dare to Be Authentic Talk Radio Worldwide with relationship coach, life coach, and author Mari Mitchell, broadcasting live from Southern California.